Carlson, what you had suggested by way of order, I thought we would take, because we don't think it'll take a long time, higher education first. And Representative Huntley, if we see Senator Berglund before the K-12 folks, would you prefer to have us call you, or?
I could go back and be called.
If you're okay with that, we can still, rather than have you sit here, we can.
Chairman, originally we talked about K-12 going first morning, but I don't think Trump is here yet. So I did mention to Representative Greiling, who is here, that we might go with higher ed first.
Well, let's make sure we call Representative Huntley as we get closer to Human Services. That's okay. Thanks. Okay, let's proceed with higher education. Senator Pappas and Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chairman, who do you want to go first?
What's your? I'm not sure if the two of
you. Senior Iron Ranger.
All right, Senator Pappas. I guess that's you.
What am I, like, a year older than you?
Oh, I meant in seniority.
Oh,
Madam Chair.
Oh, good, good.
Chairman, I think what he's saying is that once an Iron Ranger, always an Iron Ranger. Is that what that means?
Take the lady out of the reins, but you can't take the reins out of the lady.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm just here to talk about the article in the finance bill related to higher education, and we're very pleased in the set. Although it's never good to be cutting higher education, and we're very sensitive to the struggles that students have and how high our tuition is, at least we're pleased that we're not cutting. We're cutting less than half of the governor's cut, and that is on page A. I guess how do you do the paging? R1A. Go with the R's. R1. 22.8 million. If you then turn, Mr. Albrecht will go over the money, so I'm going to talk a little bit about any accompanying language. On R3, at the bottom of the page, is where we do give specific, explicit instructions to the Office of the Chancellor that in terms of how the cut should be made, and that students should be protected as much as possible, and the cut should come out of the Office of the Chancellor and technology expenses that don't impact students. And we trust that they'll keep with their commitment to only raise tuition in the two-year colleges 2% and three-year colleges 3%. On R4, subdivision 3 is where we fix a problem that we actually created last year when we went to non-resident tuition for half of the Minsky two-year colleges. Some of the others went to two-year went to non-resident tuition on their own, and we didn't really feel that they should be penalized, so we appropriate $500,000 to make them whole. On R5, at the subdivision 4, we also created a problem with reciprocity, and don't ask me to explain it, but it did create a $1 million penalty for colleges that are heavily involved in reciprocity, especially with Wisconsin students. And if you really want more details, we'll let Mr. Albrecht explain it, or someone from the office. Then, let's see, on page R6, what was sent to Page R6 is where, and we have the language later on in the bill, we did appropriate $500,000 to the School of Public Health to create a computer model to analyze healthcare reforms and to provide an economic analysis. The next section that was in the House bill, we sent to Judiciary Committee without recommendation. Then on R8, the Senate has similar language to the House in our policy bill, Senate File 2942. And R9, the Senate has similar language in our K-12 policy bill, Senate File 3001. On R10 is where we begin how we allocated the state grant surplus. And in Section 6, we took a portion of it and dropped the assigned family responsibility by 3%. In Section 7 of the Senate side, is we make spouses and dependents of resident veterans eligible for the state grant and the child care grant. In our, on our 11 is where we do the next part of how we spent the state grant, where we drop the student responsibility 1%. And in Section 9, we remove our sunset for our LME, our living and miscellaneous expenses trigger, which goes into effect if we're running a surplus in the state grant, so that students will get that money. On R12, we have similar language in Senate Bill 2942. Moving to R14 is where we repeal the ACHIEVE program in Senate Bill 2942. Other language, we repeal it in this bill, but there's other language in Senate Bill 2942. On R16, when we appropriated money for the TEACH program last year, we forgot to allow them to use a little bit of that for administrative costs. That's what we do in Section 10. Our private school deregulation is in 2942. And that jump to... to R21. This language has already been passed in the bonding bill. On R22, that also has been passed in the bonding bill.
Right, yeah, exactly. It's half.
On R26, this is from the Office of Higher Education, and it allows individuals who are eligible to receive safety officer survivor grants to be eligible to receive the grant until age 30. Right, currently it's age 23, and this is from the Office of Higher Education, as I mentioned. On R27 is the rest of how we spent the state grant surplus, and we increased the tuition maximum. On the bottom of the page, we eliminate language consistent with the repeal of the ACHIEVE program. On R29, this is at the request of the University of Minnesota top of the page, subdivision 18, is similar language to the House, just adding the Indian scholarship appropriation to that ability for the university to transfer balances. Excuse me, ability of the Office of Higher Education to transfer balances. And then Section 17, we change in lines 8022 to 8023 how the money is to be dispersed to the University of Minnesota for meeting their accountability goals. That's on page R31. On page R36, this is where we have the language to fund the global model at the School of Public Health. And on R37 is also requesting them to do an economic analysis of any healthcare reform proposals so that the legislature has accurate information or objective information about those proposals. And that's all that's in the Senate bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll go over our fiscal part of the bill first.
Mr. Chairman, did you want Mr. Albrecht to go through the spreadsheet before we go to the House side?
If you want to go through the entirety, that's fine. I thought maybe you'd want to alternate, but that's – Representative Rukavina, is that what you'd like to do?
Go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Albrecht.
excuse me, Mr. Chair and members. On the higher education spreadsheet, the Senate position is shown in the last series of columns on the right-hand side of the paper, beginning with changes in the Office of Higher Education with the state grant program. The first change the Senate makes is shown on line 11, and that's reducing the student share 1% to 45%. And that costs $7.25 million in fiscal year 09. On line 12 is the increase in the four-year tuition maximum. That carries a cost of $1.62 million in fiscal 2009. On line 13 is a reduction of 3% in the assigned family responsibility, and that has a cost of $4.5 million. The change in the definition of resident student to include the spouse of veterans, resident veterans, is $16,000. And the Senate leaves $1.6 million unallocated to accommodate any uncertainty in the estimates of the cost of those items above. On line 18 are some small amounts that the Senate discovered in consultation with the Office of Higher Education could be reduced and not affect the operation of these programs. On line 18 is $250,000 for the college savings plan. On line 19 is a $250,000 reduction in the amount for tuition reciprocity payments. On line 20 is a cancellation of a previous appropriation of $90,000 for rewriting the state grant software. On line 21 is the $7 million reduction in the appropriation for the ACHIEVE program. And on line 22 is an operating budget reduction of $111,000. The next series of changes are for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. The first two items there on 26 and 27 are the appropriations that Senator Pappas discussed. And on line 28 is the $6.6 million ongoing operating budget reduction. The changes for the University of Minnesota begin on line 35 and 36. Line 35 shows the healthcare modeling appropriation, and line 36 shows the operating budget reduction. The ongoing total reduction for the University of Minnesota is $5 million. And a couple of small transfers from the Special Revenue Fund on line 43 and 44. 43 is a technology carry forward that was allowed, I believe, last year in statute. And on line 44, a small surplus in the Private Institutions Regulation Fund.
It still says there's.
Okay. And Senator Pappas, I just want to make sure.
No, it doesn't.
It's understood that part of the cut to the University of Minnesota is a one-time cut that you've discussed with them. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any questions on the Senate side of higher education? Okay. Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. on the spreadsheet, the first item we have on line 8 is a grant to the Power of You. Representative Carlson's appropriated money to continue the programs at St. Paul and Minneapolis and expand it to two suburban and rural districts. We have a grant to teachers of color for $200,000. We reduce the student share from 46 to 44.5 for $10.875 million. On line 14, we spend the same $16,000 for spouses of veterans, and we end up with $109,000 on the bottom line for the state grant program. We reduce the ACHIEVE program $7 million. In the side-by-side, you'll see not being as pugnacious as Senator Pappas, I didn't eliminate the program, and so we carry money in the out years for it. And then we reduced the budget at OHE by the typical 4% at $111,000. We reduced the MNSCU appropriation by $6.173 million and in the out years by $8.664 million, and the university by $6.172 million, again in the out years by $8.666 million. And that is the fiscal part of the bill. And you just want me to continue, Mr. Chair? To the
well, let me just ask. Well, I was wondering about the 10-11 cut to MNSCU. Okay, now I've caught up with what you did. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Answer my own question.
On the spreadsheet, then, or the side-by-side, excuse me, we did similar language that Senator Pappas discussed. We took $5 million from the office of, from the MNSCU central office on their technology budget, and we also put language in there to that locks in the tuition increases at 3% for four-year universities and 2% for the two-year colleges. Point to page R6. There's language in there that Senator Pappas referred to that's in her policy bill regarding Representative Marquardt's bill for parental notification for disciplinary actions. And then on to page R8, that language allows the Department of Education to share certain data with OHE, the Minnesota Department of Education. On page 9, we create a pre-kindergarten through post-secondary P-12 partnership. That's what that language is. On page R10, Representative Senator Pappas already referred to that language dealing with spouse reimbursement for a non-Minnesota resident who's married to a veteran. On page R11, we have the language for our reduction in the student share and also that sunset language that Senator Pappas referred to on subdivision 7A there. We included in the bill the language from the Office of Higher Education regarding the Indian Scholarship Program. So that goes through page R14, where as I mentioned, Mr. Chair, we left the ACHIEVE program in place, and this was clarifying language for the ACHIEVE Scholarship Program that was recommended by OHE. We put language in there that clarifies that the program is available up to what's left in appropriation, I believe, in the out years. So. Okay, on page R16, it's the same language last year's bill on the TEACH program that their administrative expenses up to 5% could be taken from that appropriation. On Article 3 on Section 14 through 21 is technical language that Senator Pappas mentioned was in her policy bill relating to private colleges. On Section 22, 23, and 24 on R19 is language that I had in last year's bill that adds union representation to the MNSCU board and clarifies that the student appointees on the board have to be students going to MNSCU.
And
on page
Representative Rukavina, if I can ask relative to that, I'm just trying to glance at the language. Does that specify, so you've got three members who are students and how many labor members?
Yes, I believe it's four. The student number was left alone, but last year, if you recall, Mr. Chair, there was think the governor was considering putting a St. John University student on the MNSCU board, so it clarifies they have to be there. And then there's four appointees by the of union representation, and they're spelled out in there.
But you don't change the total membership?
No.
Okay.
The page R20 is language on Representative Carlson's bill that deals with the expansion of the Power of You program. And on page R21, it's technical language relating to state regulation of private colleges and universities, I believe. And that goes through page R25, which makes technical corrections dealing with the number of credits that a student must take for the nursing loan forgiveness program. There was a change to clarify that by Representative Hosh. I don't know if Senator Pappas has that another bill or not. On page R27 is more language dealing with the Power of You and also the appropriation for Representative Norton's Teacher of Color program. And on R29 is the language discussed by Senator Pappas on both sides dealing with the Indian Scholarship Program. And on R31, Section 34, clarifies the language the governor insisted on adding last year for the university to be able to get the second year of their appropriation. I think we fixed that up, and it's agreed on by finance and everyone involved. On R32, language that we inserted dealing with the appropriation to the biogenomics project at the Mayo, between the Mayo and the university. And R33, Section 36 deals again with Representative Carlson's Power of You program. And Section 37 is language to implement the Teachers of Color pilot program that we appropriated money for. On page R35, again, we're dealing with in Section 38, Power of You. And on Section 39, we're again, this language dealing with the labor representatives on the MNSCU board. And that's all, Mr. Chair. That's it, quickly.
And Representative Rukavina, you've made several references to Senator Pappas' policy bill. You know, we've had discussions about what to do with policy in the supplemental finance bill. Have you and Senator Pappas discussed whether or not you're going to have then a separate policy bill? Is that the assumption?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just take directions from Representative Carlson, and I haven't gotten any directions yet. But, you know, one person's policy is another person's fiscal language. So, I mean, it's hard to separate some of this stuff out. I've worked very well with my former Iron Range colleague over there, so I'm more than happy to do with it, but I'm going to have to take directions from the boss over there sitting next to me.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I did send Representative Rukavina the companion to my policy bill. I believe it's in Senator Carlson's committee right now. So if we did want to create a separate policy bill, we would be able to do that. Or if the chairs want us to negotiate everything in this committee, that would be fine with me as well.
Well, I just wondered where the two of you might be procedurally. Are there questions for Representative Rukavina? Any further questions on Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair, and I don't know if it's for Representative Rukavina or Senator Pappas, but I've been getting a lot of emails about don't cut the Power of You program. And can somebody tell me what y'all did that might be generating those emails?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, my understanding is that the money which is at St. Paul in Minneapolis, it was matched by private contributions, and that money is running out, at least the state portion, and I don't know if, like, St. Paul Company and that are still Travelers, whatever they are now, still participating. They spoke in committee on behalf of the program. So this $3.8 million appropriation continues the programs at St. Paul, Minneapolis, and then Representative Carlson, in his wisdom, who's been working on this for years and similar programs, expanded it to allow two suburban schools and two rural schools to also take advantage of the program with the state appropriation. That's in here at $3.8 million.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, the power of you, which is, you know, a wonderful, has a wonderful potential, has not received any state money. It's in the, they're about a third of the way through a five-year pilot with private money. And they're concerned that they won't be able to promise a new cohort that they could begin next fall if they don't have some state money. So that's kind of the issue. But they are still at the beginning stages of a five-year pilot.
Of course, Senator Pappas, we had a lengthy hearing in your division about the program and what it's been doing.
Mr. Chairman, I think it has a lot of promise. We just have to decide if this is the right year to provide state money or next year during our regular budget year.
Senator Higgins, or Senator Frederickson.
Was Senator Higgins through?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, you indicated on R6 there was a section on private data, and I believe it has to do with disciplined students, and that was sent to Judiciary Committee in the Senate. What the status of that bill is now in the Senate?
Still in Judiciary.
The policy bill. Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, we believe it's still in Judiciary.
Thank you.
That's the House Section
5.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, to that point, Senator Frederickson, we had a lot of discussion on this, and I think the Senate bill is a lot more restrictive as far as we allow an opt-out by the, I think the student has to sign a waiver slip of some kind to allow that information to flow to their parents. And I don't think the Senate bill in Judiciary allows that. We had a kind of a little discussion over whether or not that should be allowed, and we went with that suggestion.
Okay. Further questions for either Senator Pappas or Representative Rukavina? Okay. Thank you. Before we get Senator Pappas, maybe you might just stick around for a second. Before we get to Representative Greiling and Senator Stumpf, we just wanted to discuss with conferees and other division chairs that are present, as well as people affected by the different sections, as to how we're going to handle working groups. There's a memorandum that went out. Representative Carlson, I'm not sure. I think not simultaneously, but we've sent a memorandum to all the division chairs and staff relative to working groups for the various divisions. I know that some division chairs have been meeting with their respective counterparts and have some recommendations back to the conference committee. But we're hoping that the members, House and Senate, can agree with each other as to how they'd like to handle a working group. Time is going to be difficult. We'd like to have, to whatever extent you might have public hearings to either discuss what you're doing or at least present recommendations on a broader basis before you bring it back to the conference committee. We've got our thought was Representative Carlson and I talked about is I think the House is in, at least insofar as today is concerned, the House is in session possibly for a longer period of time than we think the Senate. Senate Finance is going to meet this afternoon during the House session. But when that's concluded, our thought was that possibly the conference committee would not meet later this afternoon, this evening, but that working groups could meet during that time. During that period of time, Representative Carlson and I have several hours of work that we need to do together. And we'll try to schedule time over these next several days so that they're however you want to structure your working group, you'll have time to work together. Obviously, with the number of divisions we have, this is going to become a little bit confusing, but we're hoping that that way we can get some sense from the chairs who are not members of the conference committee, from their divisions as to what works, what doesn't work, and then obviously try to do our best to take into account those recommendations in terms of what we put together by way of a conference committee report. So I would suggest the memorandum that's gone out is somewhat more detailed than this brief explanation, and I know on the Senate floor I'll have a chance hopefully to talk to all of the division chairs about how they might proceed. So, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, just to add, the memo on the House side went out, I think it was Saturday afternoon, if I recall. So our division chairs, if they're up to date on their emails, should have received that over the weekend. A discussion that I would suggest that might be fruitful at this point, being that we haven't refined the numbers yet, would be maybe a beginning discussion in those working groups of some of the policy issues that are in this bill. And ultimately, we're going to have to make a decision as to what policy we carry in this bill and what policy may be carried in other conference committees. But that's a discussion yet that is yet to come. I know staff in both the House and Senate have been doing some work on preparing some information for us on the various policy issues and where some of those might ultimately go if they're not carried here. But those are decisions that we haven't talked about yet. But today that might be a good beginning point to talk about the relative policy issues that are in the various sections among the working groups.
Sir Betzel.
Well, Mr. Chair, I haven't seen the memo, so I don't quite know what it says. Yeah. But first of all, it's difficult to discuss budget issues unless I know what the larger picture is going to be. I mean, you know, we made some cuts, and the House made some cuts. But if somebody can tell me, you know, what the target ultimately is going to be, then I can work with that. Right now, I know what the House did, I know what we did, but I can't really discuss how to reconcile the two until somebody makes a bigger decision on the larger numbers. And as for policy, well, I mean, we can talk policy, but if I don't even know whether it's going to be in this bill or a different bill, what am I going to talk about? So I'm confused. As I say, I haven't seen the memo, but, you know, I don't know what I talk about.
Well, Senator Betzel, a couple things. First of all, as Representative Carlson indicated, there are discussions about how to handle the various policy items. That's why I asked Representative Rukavina about where we might be with a higher ed policy bill. Our expectation is that we will attempt to have separate policy bills for these various areas. And Representative Carlson alluded to staff discussions trying to analyze that for us. And we've participated in that, but to attempt to look at what's pure policy versus fiscally related policy and so on. So we hope to have that ready. I'm not sure Mr. Marx is and Mr. Mossman, working with Ms. Novak and Mr. Watson and others. I don't know if that's expected later today or possibly tomorrow. As far as the dollars are concerned, because this is a single bill, you know, we're looking for recommendations. So I'm not sure we're going to talk about some kind of goal. We're not sure we're going to talk about explicit targets as such. But certainly you can start discussions as to, say, with Representative Kahn, as to what works, what doesn't work, what kind of strong feelings do you have about what's in the Senate State Department's bill, what kind of position does Representative Kahn take relative to what's in her bill and what's objected to or not on either side. So you can certainly start those discussions and have some sense of what might be recommended back to the conference committee. As this process proceeds over the next couple of days, we'll refine that, but we at least wanted the discussions to start so that we don't delay.
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, just, and I can only speak for my own article, I've got virtually no policy in mind.
Right.
The House has a lot of policy in my article. So it's in my view, it's all or nothing. You know, there's nothing to trade here. And we made deeper cuts on the budget side. I'll be happy to adopt the House's areas because it's not deeper cuts, but then somebody else is going to have to make deeper cuts. I don't know what I'm going to talk about. If you want me to meet, I'll meet, but I don't know. There's nothing I can talk about until bigger decisions are made.
Okay, and it's possible that Senator Betzold, your division becomes, and I'm not going to speak for anybody else, but it's possible that your division is a little bit more of an either-or. I think with other divisions, that might be less the case. Certainly in human services, there's much more of a mixture. Higher ed has a lot of similarities. There are some differences that we just listened to. As an example, the power of you provision. Senator Pappas has an extensive section on the global modeling. Higher ed, although it's not one of the larger areas of this budget bill, certainly has some significant differences. And again, your division might be a little bit more kind of a black or white situation. Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, and I feel much the same way that Senator Betzold does. I had no policy in mind, not a little, but I had none. And Representative Paymar has some, but we're $8 million apart, which is, you know, peanuts in Senator Berglund's division. But that's a big rift in R2. And I think you'll remember that Representative Paymar flat out said what the Senate did was, did he use the word dangerous? I'm not sure. He didn't much like it there. We'll stay with that. So until we get a number, we can meet, but I don't know what we talk about.
Well, what Representative Carlson and I talked about a few minutes ago was we wanted to at least alert people to our suggestions for this. I think, particularly on the House side, there was some desire for working groups, maybe a touch less so on the Senate side. But wanted to make sure that if we are going to engage in that process, and obviously it's also this talk about working groups is not a mandate. If it's from one chairman's perspective, possibly not fruitful at this point, it's not a mandate to do it. Or you think the working group is going to be of some help, we wanted to at least suggest a process relative to that. I know that there are at least a couple of areas where House and Senate counterparts have met. I know I've seen some type of a spreadsheet, Representative Wagenius, that I think is a House spreadsheet from your division. And I'm told informally, Representative Greiling and Senator Stumpf, that you've had some discussions and some thoughts. So I know with some divisions these conversations have been taking place. And if your preference is not a formal type of working group, at least start the discussion with your counterpart as to where you are or are not. Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I indicated earlier that a decision was going to be made as to what policy might be carried in this bill and what policy might be carried in some other bills. And there have been references to, and I'll just use as an example, and it's in finance on the House side, but the Senate policy bill in higher education. We will be determining later what policy may ultimately be carried in 1812, and as I said earlier, what policy may be moved to another conference committee or carried in a separate bill. So we'd like that dialogue to begin to take place in that sense. The House made a determination that a lot of policy would be carried in 1812. The Senate has a fair amount of policy, but not nearly what the House has. And so if some of that policy is going to be moved to other conference committees, that would be a good dialogue, I think, to begin with the chairs and how you would agree on some of that policy. I don't know now whether Senator Betzfeldt has policy coming through in another vehicle or not. Maybe you just simply don't have much policy for the session. I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chair, it doesn't do any good for one working group to decide we're going to put the policy in this bill and another working group to decide we're not going to have policy in here. I mean, either we're going to have a consistent policy across the board. Decision has to be made, and we have to have some guidance as to what we're going to do. I'll just tell you from my standpoint. I went out of my way to keep policy out of this article. I'm not going to agree to anything unless I'm told that I have to. Now, a couple of things happened in the past in other bills, and, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, there's no reason why those can't be taken up. I mean, in some instances, the Senate has passed those bills. The House can take them up and pass them as well, too. If we want to put the policy, all the policy in some separate bill, that's fine. But as I say, my position is going to be no policy unless somebody makes a decision to say policy is going to be in this bill. But somebody has to tell us across the board. We can't have different working groups deciding, yes, policy here, no policy there. What do we do?
Mr. Chairman, the discussion that Senator Cohen and I have had, and when I referenced earlier that staff was working on what would be necessary to carry in this bill, I think the direction that the chairs are heading is that policy that does not support the appropriations in this bill should be handled in other conference committee reports.
Good, that's a good start.
If that helps you in terms of a discussion with your counterpart, Representative Kahn in your case, or with Senator Pappas and Representative Rukavina. What we asked the staff to do, and the Senator and I haven't had a chance to look at it together yet, is to identify those policies that support the appropriations in this bill. And we will have to talk about that, and then the rest of the policy is probably going to be recommended to be moved to other conference committees that either will be or are currently operating.
And let me just add to that. The conversations obviously have been between Representative Carlson, myself, and our respective staffs. It also has included the Speaker and the Majority Leader. This is become a process. I think these discussions started Thursday. It's taken a little bit longer than we might have expected because what we've asked the staff to do is to analyze the bill and make a recommendation to us in terms of, okay, this is pure policy. This is policy related to appropriations in the bill. This is maybe something, some freestanding section, a hybrid of some sort, that has some money but not related to anything else in the bill, that, you know, might be freestanding. And what we hope to do is bring a recommendation back to this conference committee relative to those sections. The expectation is that there will be separate policy bills, that we're not going to let policy areas that members have worked on and feel strongly about just disappear, that there will be the ability to continue working on that, get bills to the floor, bills to the governor with policy sections. And I know in some areas both bodies have some kind of an omnibus policy bill, and in some areas that's not the case. And we know that we have to do this fairly quickly. I'm hoping we might have some sense of that later today, so that at the next meeting of the conference committee, we might have a recommendation to all the conferees relative to that. So I think that would be a good place to start. And I don't mean to Sarah Betzold, you've raised questions about policy, and I don't want to prejudge what the recommendation might be, but just to use an example, because we had some discussion about it, the expectation is that even though there's been a lot of national press relative to the issue, that a 4 a.m. bar closing will probably not be in this bill. That would be probably a pretty good bet, to use an example. And so the purpose is not to start going through area by area, but you know, there's no fiscal policy arguably tied into that. So, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, it did seem to me that since both Representative Rukavina and I have a fiscal bill and a policy bill, that in our discussions we could be talking to Representative Rukavina, we could be talking about both in our discussions, policy and fiscal, and bringing in authors as appropriate of bills. And then when the chairs decide where the language should be carried, we'd be kind of all ready to go.
And
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
And I kind of maybe have a different situation because, you know, my target that I received from the leadership involved both a lot of Senator Tomasoni's bill and Senator Pappas's bill. So until we iron out how that's going to work, and I don't know if there are going to be targets given to each article or what, but I'm kind of in an unfair. I've got to let Senator Tomasoni pound on me and then Senator Pappas, too. So, you know, it's kind of unfair that I got a two-for-one here. But I'm a rep, so I can handle it.
Mr. Chairman, we have every confidence that Representative Rukavina will be able to defend himself quite adequately.
But Mr. Chair, both chairs, you know, until that fiscal part of the decision's made as to, you know, what, as a conference committee, we decide as targets, how do I even discuss what we're talking about, the policy that's related to the fiscal part of the bill? Because I don't know what it is. As an example, we have, you know, a $3.8 million appropriation in our bill that you don't have for the power review, and I don't have a target yet from this committee, so I don't know what I can negotiate.
Well, we recognize that there needs to be more further work done on our part, you know, before we can start looking at final decisions article by article. But we want to at least alert people that we'd like to have the process begin. And again, it's going to vary from division to division. You know, certainly as an example, they're not here, but Representative Huntley and Senator Berglund would have a significant number of matters to discuss right now. And again, that's going to differ division by division. Senator Higgins, in your case, I'm not sure what's there. You know, we've listened to the House bill and your bill in terms of policy issues. You know, there are some, it struck me that there were some differences, possibly small differences in terms of language that are tied to fiscal policy. And I recognize that there are the big difference in your bill is a question of what we do with the Department of Corrections, probably. Well, the courts were relatively close with one line item exception. Senator Betzold.
Mr. Chair, I do appreciate the guidance. I'm looking for something a little stronger, though. I mean, saying that, you know, we expect that these policies are not going to be in here or they should be moved out. I'm looking for something that says if it isn't directly related to the budget, it ought not to be in this bill. And there's constitutional reasons why we shouldn't be throwing a lot of things in this bill that have nothing to do with the budget. So I do hope that's what you mean, is that it's got to be direct, because what's been said so far gives enough wiggle room for people to say, well, okay, it might relate to fiscal issues, so I'll put it in the bill. It's got to relate to the budget.
Senator Betzel, maybe Representative Carlson and I should be a little bit clearer in this regard. The expectation is that items that are policy will not be in this bill. Now, having said that, Representative Rukavina made the comment that to an extent that's in the eye of the beholder, we've asked the nonpartisan staff to go very carefully through the bill and make recommendations back to us as to what should be in or should not be in this bill, given some of the guidelines we've talked about. I hesitate to say what's going to be in the bill. One, we haven't seen the staff recommendations. Two, we're going to make a recommendation back to this conference committee. We're going to have a fairly explicit motion that will say, sections 22, 23, 24, whatever, we move someplace else. It's going to be explicit. And it's not going to offer guidelines. It's going to be section by section. Now, the catch with that is you might look at the motion and say, the proposed motion, and say, I don't think section 22 should be in there. We're hoping that won't be the case, but I can't suggest what all the conferees are going to say about the recommendation we make back, but it's going to be explicit.
Well, and Mr. Chair, until I know that, it's difficult to meet with the House, my House counterparts, and again, I'll speak for my own self. It also seems to me that you may have some areas that could have fiscal impacts, do not deal directly with the budget, but we can carry them on a spreadsheet and agree that, if it has an impact but is not directly to the budget, fine, they can go somewhere else and we can track it here. I mean, we do that all the time. So I think that just because something may have some fiscal issues to it, I think you need to give the guidance as to whether or not they should or should not be in this bill just because it might have some relation to the budget.
That's what we're working on.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Carlson, anything?
Well, from the House perspective, one thing that with those discussions, the feeling was that, and this becomes clear in the memo that we put out, that those discussions be taking place in an environment where the public might have a chance to weigh in on some of these issues as well. So that would be the footnote and one of the reasons that we put it on the table to discuss here. Relative to, I think Senator Cohen was very clear then that I think the direction that we are heading in terms of what our recommendations are going to be is that most of the policy that is not directly related to supporting the appropriations in the bill will be moved to other conference committees and or other bills. Probably other conference committees, being that many of these issues, one body or the other already has a position on and would fit in the rules in terms of moving them to another conference committee if the Senate has a position on an issue or if we do. Many of our positions on a number of issues appear in 1812, but not all of them by any means. I mean, there's other policy issues that are out there in policy bills that are coming forward. And I think an example of that is our K-12 bill does have. We have a policy bill that Representative Greiling's in the process of putting together in K-12. But, Mr. Chairman, maybe we can at this point move on to our next presentation.
and just to conclude this, I would ask members of the Senate division chairs who are here to maybe, if you get a chance, take a look at the memo before floor session, and I'll talk to each senator individually during the floor session. But if we can proceed with Senator Stumpf,
Mr. Chairman,
and Representative Greiling and Representative Greiling, Representative Slawick, going to join you,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Tomasoni.
Very quickly, it seems to me that since this is a finance bill, that if articles in the bill are related to finance, whether or not they are related to solving this budget, that might be an appropriate consideration for the bill. And I'm not thinking of anything in specific, but since I don't think we should have a hard, fast rule as to what can and can't be in here.
Okay, well, we're trying to be careful. Okay, we have, starting on page, the beginning of the K-12 education, and in the Senate, we have everything contained within the E-12 committee chaired by Senator Stumpf. In the House, I believe you have two separate divisions, Representative Slawick and Representative Greiling. How do members wish to start? Start with the House, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm happy to start, and as part of the House presentation, I'm going to turn it over very shortly to Representative Slawik so she can do the early childhood section first, since we do have two sections in the House, and that one will be shorter. But I just want to say first that I very much appreciate the discussion that just took place. I think that that was very helpful for all of us to kind of get straight what we're doing. And I wanted to announce to the people who are here that I think it's posted, but that at 10:30 tomorrow morning, Senator Stump and I and our working groups will be meeting in room 300 South in the state office building. We may get a better room, but for now that's our placeholder for all people who are here who are interested in that attending that working group. And I will just, my one other comment, Senator Betzel's frustrations as far as policy and finance are new to this year, but the frustrations of many members not having fiscal targets was something that the Education Finance Committee was frustrated with all last session at the end. So hopefully we can get that resolved soon, because we know how frustrating that was to wonder what should we meet about without any fiscal target. I will turn it over then, Mr. Chair, if that's all right, to Representative Slawik.
Representative Slawik.
Okay, thank you, Chair Greiling, and Mr. Chairs, and to the members, page R79 and then on page R80. So the last page we'll start with first. Early childhood education in the House is a division. We had a target of zero, so we had no cuts, no increases, but we have one item here that we would hopefully like to see in the final bill. This is a Representative Sandy Peterson initiative. It's an advisory council on early childhood education. At the top of R80, you can see membership. Basically, there's a federal Head Start reauthorization that creates this council that the governor can appoint it. What we'd like to do, we work closely with the governor's office, work with them on instead of the governor appointing a council and us creating a council, working together to have one council. Talks about the membership, some of the duties of the council. We also would like to see a goal of all children to be school ready by 2020. So that is in the House version. And then administration, we take current funds and we use them, $12,500 from the Federal Child Care and Development Fund, administrative funds, and $12,500 from the Pre-Kindergarten Exploratory Project funds. So, Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, that's it for the Early Childhood Education Division.
Okay. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to Chair Slawik. I'm just going to go through some of the highlights of the bill, and then Mr. Crow, who seems to have abandoned us and sat over there on the with the Senate side, will go through the spreadsheet. So first of all, our marquee piece in this bill is the $51 per pupil that that we're very proud of. It's one-time money, and it is not linked to the formula. But nonetheless, we think with the state that schools are in that that is essential. We also have flexibility in the House bill for another $51 per pupil of one-time money that they may take if they have sufficient funds in their operating capital account, and they could transfer up to that amount of $51 into the general fund to help tide them over with these dire times. We start with the permanent school fund. It's our intention to eventually have it not be an offset, but to be actually direct money to schools and dedicated to technology as requested for a stable source for technology by the PS Minnesota report. For starters, we just say that any funding that exceeds $36 per pupil would not be offset. And so that's kind of a wash for this year, but it's our intention to build on that aggressively as we go forward. We have eliminated the deduction for wind energy tax credits that was put in last year to treat wind energy on a par with the taconite tax, which we think would be fair policy. Whether it's good policy or not, it would be fair to treat them both the same. We have an intermediate school district borrowing bill to allow intermediate districts to have the same advantages for borrowing as school districts do. We have the capital bond repayment period is extended from 10 years to 15 years so that districts can accommodate their borrowing more easily. There's been a lot of work by the governor's office and Representative Marquardt on reciprocity in their area for transfer back and forth of students to get the payments fairly accounted for, and it would actually affect the boundaries in the whole state, not just that western boundary. And then we clarify the referendum ballot language. We've been striving for a few years to have that language be fair and neutral so it doesn't spook voters or unnecessarily encourage them, but just as plain old neutral. There are 7 provisions in the bill for individual districts, such as fund transfers and the like. And then we also fund the Principal's Academy, continue the Special Ed Task Force, which we're looking forward to coming up with some recommendations that will help us out in the rapidly rising cost of special education. We have advocates and school people that are going to be charged to continue on and hopefully come to some agreement with the ability not just to say state or federal standard, but rather come to some middle ground. We think that will help them complete their task. From the policy committee, included in this bill with some assuming some funding from the department, it's one of those areas where we'll have to decide if it goes in the policy bill or the finance bill, but is the new report card that's been worked on so much over the interim. We have the safe school levy. Some of the new funding that we appropriated last year would be dedicated, the $3 new from last year, to school support staff rather than be one of the options. The school districts would actually have to do that because with the money we gave them with the new option, none of them actually used it for any new counselors, and I don't think any school support staff. We have some eliminated a report from superintendents. We have some flexibility with the advanced placement international baccalaureate funding and the CLEP testing fee funding and the Minnesota Academy reimbursement that they can get that from private insurance as well as the public plans. We have a language in here for portfolio teacher licensure, another route that's cheaper and faster, but yet would have qualified teachers through the Board of Teaching. Some cost-neutral but flexibility language for adult basic education and the GED reimbursement rates. Some notice, earlier notice required for charter school teachers that are going to leave their school districts or stay out. Ending participation in No Child Left Behind, that was an amendment. In the committee, FIED, which was an amendment in a later committee, and there again, some of these things need to be considered maybe for the policy committee. And then finally, another amendment was the school district improvement plan for student academic achievement, spelling out what districts should do to improve if they're behind in the achievement gap. And Mr. Chair and members, those are the highlights. And Mr. Crow, he came over to our side now, can go through the fiscal spreadsheet.
Okay. Before we turn over to Mr. Crow, let me just ask a couple questions. First of all, the No Child Left Behind. So you have linked. Can I ask you where that language is in the bill?
Okay. The No Child Left Behind.
Session law, so.
Did you pay for it?
R61.
R61.
R61,
section 56.
Okay, brilliant. What, R61, I'm told?
Got it. Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chair, R61, line 46.21.
Okay. My question for President Greiling, I guess it's just fairly simple language. Obviously, there's some federal money that's tied to this. I think there seems to be a consensus that this is a federal program that hasn't worked very well. but there's still dollars attached to it. If we end our participation, what's the financial consequence to Minnesota?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, it would be in the tens of millions. I think it was $219 million or something like that. We had that discussion both in the committee and on the floor, and I think what members were doing here with Representative Garofalo's amendment was kind of sending a signal, which we've sent many signals to Washington, to either end the participation or to mend it in some way. And so I think that was the spirit in which this passed in our committee. I'm not certain that everyone was thinking it would survive the end of session, but the strong signal was sent.
Okay. And then the second question I had was, at the outset, you mentioned, if I could also have a page reference, you mentioned some type of wind energy tax credit.
Right. Mr. Chair, I'm going to let the staff hunt for it while I start to explain it. Last year, on a recommendation from the Department of Education, the offset, there was the wind energy was not considered new money for school districts. And we took that recommendation and that passed the full legislature. And we thought that was good policy. R36. R36, thank you. It's R36, lines 30.26.
Okay. There's also some language on R18. Is that different?
That's the consultants. That allows them to do
this. Wind energy conversions.
Oh, yes, Mr. Chair, that was a different bill, but it's definitely related on R18. The language on R18 was a bill to let groups of school districts buy into wind turbine farms and reap that financial benefit. And then and it has to go hand in hand to make any sense with the language on R36, because that is the language that allows school districts to get financial gain from doing that. And okay, Mr. Chair, I stand corrected. The staff is just telling me that they're totally separate bills and they're not connected. So let me ask Mr. Crow, if the groups of students were buying in, they would get new revenue then from having that?
No.
Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair and members, the partnership allows the districts to participate in wind energy projects. The wind energy production tax offset provision basically allows any district, whether it's in a partnership or not, or whether you adopted the partnership language or not, to receive the revenue generated by those wind energy projects. And so,
well, right, Mr. Chair, but Mr. Crow, but Mr. Chair and members, Representative Lencheski and I have discussed this, however, with Representative Bly, whose language it was for the groups of districts to be able to buy in. And, we were telling him it doesn't, even if the groups of districts buy in a group for environmental purposes, unless they're actually getting some financial gain from it, you know, they could be environmental and help out and it would be an exercise for students. But it's the new revenue for students, if you don't have the offset, that I think is the interest here for both bills. And so, like I said, we in our committee last year took what is now the Senate position, which is to have the offset. But this year, the Southern Minnesota districts came forward, Representative Brown and Representative Demmer and others, and made a strong case that it wasn't fair that they were promised, they said, when they encouraged wind turbines on their farms and for their school districts, that they would be helping out the financial situation of those local school districts. So, and then we had some comparisons with the taconite tax offset treatment, and so we decided to treat them both the same. And like I said, not that we think it's such good policy, but we thought in the interest of fairness, it, one should not be treated one way and another treated another way.
And Representative Greiling, my question, to be honest, was maybe more process than substance. I recognize that the K-12 bill is a bit of a hybrid because when you start dealing with levies in the K-12 bill, you get into not just simply finance or appropriation issues, but you get into to tax issues. But I'm wondering if this might be, and we can discuss it later, a bit of a stretch for this conference committee, and Mr. Nauman is shaking his head vociferously no. But I assume the tax chairman, I mean, what we did in the Senate is we passed the finance bill to the floor, Senator Stumpf's separate bill to the tax committee, had the tax committee review it, send it back. I'm not sure they didn't send it back, but we amended the finance bill on the floor then to reflect the work of the tax committee. But I want to make sure that this is a provision that ought to be here as opposed to the omnibus tax bill.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, it's a bit of a misnomer to call this a tax credit. What this is an adjustment against appropriations, a subtraction, if you will, against appropriations for revenues generated off of wind turbines. So this definitely is an offset against the appropriation.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's helpful because there was the phrase tax credit at some point, so that's helpful. Mr. Crota, do you wish to go through the spreadsheet then?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Carlson.
If I may ask Representative Greiling for a clarification on the No Child Left Behind. It's my understanding after the amendment went on the House floor that we wouldn't necessarily pull out of No Child Left Behind unless it was cost effective to do that, and that would be the Commissioners of Finance and Education that would make that determination. So they would be looking at the net, I assume, is what the issue there. I listened to the debate on the floor, but it's been a while, so I just want to make sure my understanding as we move forward with future discussions on this is correct.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, you're correct. That was Representative Kalin's amendment, and that did qualify the pulling out only if we were not losing revenue. Thank you.
I think that's important to note in terms of what the fiscal impact potentially might be, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. Representative Greiling, did you wish – Mr. Crowe, were you going to go through the spreadsheet then? Is that the plan?
Mr. Chair, I can. It might make some sense to do the Senate provisions at the same time as we walk through the spreadsheet, and Mr. Nauman and I can go back and forth as we go, or unless you want to hear from Senator Stumpf first.
Senator Stumpf, do you want to go ahead then?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, the Senate tried to divide out the policy, although we weren't 100%. The policy that you have that's in here is attached, like it's a task force that has a cost to it or some provision that has a minor cost to it. And I appreciate the discussion that this committee had a little bit earlier, that it's very difficult when you mix the policy and the finance together. The goal of the Senate Education Finance Committee was to try to figure out how we could get permanent money into our schools as possible. And so the approach that we used was to eliminate subtraction, the school trust fund subtraction, and in so doing, that sends out on a permanent basis somewhere around $35-$36 per pupil. We also have, I think, one difference between the House and the Senate. I think we also have some tax levy provisions in the Senate language. With that, I think maybe I could ask Mr. Nauman to go through the spreadsheet, and then most of the policy related to the finance issues are tied up in No Child Left Behind and what we end up doing with that.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I think Mr. Crow and I will go back and forth. I think it's easiest to compare things line by line. And there's a spreadsheet that is in front of you. I think your copy looks like it has three holes up in the top. And that's one that we're working for, four, I guess. So, Mr. Chairman, the first provision on line four was a governor's recommendation. Both the House and Senate carry same numbers on this. This is reciprocity with neighboring states. Primarily in the southwestern portion of the state, there is issues with students open enrolling across district boundaries into South Dakota, and in some cases students enrolling back. And the Department of Education has done some work to come up with a reciprocity agreement. This does carry a little bit of state aid cost and some minor levy impacts. The Senate position carries about $86,000 in fiscal 10 and 11, so it doesn't have an effect until the tails.
Mr. Chair, and the House has a slightly different number just because the numbers were revised as the bills were going through the process. On line 5, the House bill has $51 of one-time money, which is about $50 million, $44 in this biennium and $5 million in the tails for school districts paid out on a weighted pupil unit basis. On line 6, both bills have a reduction in the alternative compensation program. The House has a one-year limitation on districts applying or districts participating in fiscal 2009. That results in a savings of about $23 million, $21 in the current biennium, $20 and $2 million in the tails.
And Mr. Chair and members, the Senate approach was for a five-year pause on the alternative QCOMP program. The numbers are slightly different in the first couple of years because of the date at which the Senate picked versus what the House picked. But functionally, the initiative is the same, just the number of years is different. What is different is on line 7, the Senate chose to, because this is a program that requires that only some districts are participating in, it doesn't strike members of the Senate that it was a general education program. It was then rolled out of general education and made a grant program, which you will see in addition to a subsequent line. On line 8 is the revenue that Senator Stump spoke about, the roughly $36 per resident ADM. You see a spend of $28.8 million and then a tail of $29.9 and $30.6. Projections are for the Permanent School Trust Fund to begin spinning off higher dollars, so getting rid of the subtraction early provides some additional money into the future.
And, Mr. Chair, the House bill, as Representative Greiling noted, has any amount exceeding $36 going to school districts as added revenue rather than as a general fund offset. The $36 threshold is not exceeded until after the 2011 biennium. So for planning purposes on as we're tracking this biennium and next biennium, there's no effect of the House provision.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 9, the reverse SOD aid payment shift. This is a residual effect of some of the shifts that we did in the 2002 session where some districts were taken to a 97-3 payment schedule at the same time we were taking most districts to an 83-17 schedule. And that generates a little bit of one-time savings by cleaning up the books for that on that recommendation. This Senate took that $6.1 million in savings. Mr. Chair and members, as a result of some provisions in the tax bill, there's often interactions between the K-12 spending and changes in tax base in the tax bill. In this particular year, the Senate added seasonal recreational property back under the referendum market value tax base. That would have created a substantial $6 to $12 million of savings as a result of a higher tax base, making some certain school districts look wealthier to the K-12 formulas. To adjust for that, the Senate bill made some equalizing factor tax base adjustments. That's shown on line 10. We'll see that also again when we get into the levy. So there's just some minor aid savings as a result of that. Mr. Chair and members, the Chapter 154, which was the first tax bill, made some changes to the utility transitions. And both bills are carrying some costs. There's been some dispute as to what the right number for us to carry in that on that line item is. So the House and Senate bills are different, but the position is related to Chapter 154. Mr. Chair and members, on line 12, the Rushford-Peterson School District, this was one of the flood-affected districts from the floods last August, gains an additional $158,000 in both bills. And that is for both Fiscal 9 and Fiscal 10. Mr. Chair and members, you can come in at any time. I'm happy to explain this for you. Mr. Chair and member, the Lancaster School District's is dealing with an adjustment to their sparsity aid. The House bill provided $100,000 of grant. The Senate bill provided $82,000 of a grant in Fiscal 9 and then included it on its included the money on a on the transition revenue program to make up for this loss. In the Senate position, Fiscal 10 and 11 is both an aid and levy mix, so you're only seeing part of that $82,000 on that line.
Mr. Chair and members, line 14 is the wind energy production tax offset that we talked about. That is an offset to a district's general education revenue, which is funded out of the general fund. So in eliminating that offset, the House has $260,000 of extra general fund cost via the general education program in Fiscal 10 and 11 combined.
And Mr. Chair and members, on line 15, the Senate makes a $2.2 million reduction to the statewide testing budget in Fiscal 9 and then reduces the TALES by $2 million each year. Mr. Chair and members, the best practices grants was reinstituted in the Senate package on line 16 for a $910,000 appropriation. Inside that appropriation are riders of $275,000 for the Humanities Commission, $160,000 for a Chance to Grow New Visions, $200,000 for the Historical Society, and $275,000 for the Principals Leadership Academy, and that was a governor's recommendation. Mr. Chair and members, on line 17, this is a provision in the Senate bill that only has a TALES effect. The TALES were turned off, so the $2 million projected TAIL planning estimate for Fiscal 10 and 11 has been zeroed out in the Senate recommendation. Similarly, on lines 18 and 19, reductions for the Get Ready
Get... Just before we move from line 17, so what is the difference between the House and the Senate?
Mr. Chair and members, on line 17, I'm looking at the House columns now to answer this question. You'll notice for Fiscal Year 10 and 11, there is a $2 million TAIL planning estimate. You see that on line 17. That's the forecast in TAIL. The Senate recommendation zeroes that out. This is a new line item that was created in last year's budget, and I think there was some feeling on the Senate part that in next year's budget, those individuals that care about this line item can come back and speak to the committee a little bit more about it.
Okay, thanks.
And, Mr. Chair and members, that a similar approach was taken for lines 18 and 19, the Get Ready, Get Credit two programs were both reduced in the current biennium by $1.95 and $658,000 respectively. But similar to the line item you just spoke of, Mr. Chairman, the TAILs were turned off. They were reduced so that the committee will then begin looking at these programs in more detail in the next budget setting session. On line 20 and 21 are two governor's recommendations. The math science teacher training program receives $400,000 in the Senate package beginning in 2009. The next line item, the so-called governor's iPod or the Minnesota Virtual Education Program, $200,000 each year. Both of those are governor's programs.
Erickson.
Madam Chair and members, on line 22, the House has an appropriation of $400,000 for the Principals Leadership Institute. As Mr. Nauman noted, the Senate funds $275,000 on a one-time basis. On line 16, the House appropriation is an ongoing appropriation of $400,000.
And Mr. Chair and members, I also mentioned earlier that the Senate took a slightly different approach on QCOMP by rolling the program out of general education, so there was a net reduction of $42 million in 10, 46 in 11. These show up as positive adjustments on line 23. There's no change in the current participation. Both the Senate and the House fund a special education task force second year. The Senate funds it in 09. The House funds it, just increases the existing $20,000 appropriation in 2008 by $20,000.
And so just on the going back to the QCOM program, so we have the savings, and obviously that's a place where we've tried to utilize that unspent money, as I understand it, for some of these general education purposes. What's the status then in the out years of the QCOM program?
Mr. Chairman, the status is that all of those school districts that are currently in QCOM continue to be in QCOM. And there's a little bit of a variation between the date as to when that new districts that might come in. I believe the House is March and we have February. And but otherwise, there's no effect on
so,
any
so
of
the program is not being ended.
She sounds like the daughter.
So because there's been discussion about the end of QCOM and so on, so I just want to make sure that on the conference committee we understand the intent of both chairs that you're not ending the program. Representative Greiling?
Mr. Chair, members, the House terminates the funding for 1 year, or kind of blinks it off and then puts it back, and the Senate actually has it for the next 5 years, blinked off.
Okay. But you continue the districts that are in the program continue the program. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. Both of us keep the funding in there for the districts that are in it, but there are districts coming in soon that are working on it and plan to get in, and for them, the House would blink off their opportunity for 1 year, whereas the Senate, I think that's where you're hearing what you're hearing. For the foreseeable future, they would not be able to apply.
Okay, I just want to make sure, at least for the purposes of this conference committee, we don't get, we watch out for the rhetoric that the program is not being ended. And if we hear that from the administration, that in your divisions you ended the program, that's not a correct statement.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Nauman.
Perhaps one thing that will help clarify this point. In the last budget setting session, the Senate took a similar approach to this program. There was about $35 million of aid and levy that in the last forecast, because that initiative from the Senate did not become law, that credited back in the last forecast. So what we're talking about here is forecasting future participation. Both the House and the Senate recapture money that is included in the forecast but may or may not be used. The Senate and the House both recapture that and respend that money inside the bill and send that money out to districts.
All right, well, that's helpful. Thanks. I'm not sure what we left out. Mr. Crow, I think I interrupted you. Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman and members, we were last on the Special Education Task Force. I think I already went through that line. That brings us down to line 25, which is the Rushford-Peterson Facilities Grant. The next couple, three or four lines relate to appropriations that were made in the special session to some of the flood-affected districts. These, in a sense, were over-appropriated, and so savings can be captured here. These districts did not need the money that was appropriated here. They're receiving facilities money in other parts of the budget. So savings is captured in the House bill of $130,000 for Rushford Peterson, and the Senate recaptures $250,000. Mabel Canton, both bills recapture the $50,000 for that district and $60,000 for Houston. The disaster facilities relief grants, both bills accept governor's recommendations to reduce that to $14,000 from the original $90,000, I think that ends the facilities recaptures.
See, I've been asked to make an announcement before we go back to Mr. Crow. I'm told that whatever we're talking about is being carried other places, not Mr. Nauman, Mr. Crow, but some of the private conversations. So, for whatever it's worth.
Chairman, these microphones are very sensitive. I've been up in my office, and you can hear whispering.
Oops.
Really? What are we talking about?
Well, it was
whispering, so I'm not going to tell.
Okay, so let's just try to be careful as we're discussing matters with people next to us. I'm sorry, Mr. Crow?
Mr. Chair and members, the other thing to note on the flood reductions is that Rushford-Peterson on line 12 gets an increase of about $310,000 over the base, and so some of these reductions are actually plowed back into additional funding for Rushford-Peterson. Then on line 29, the Virginia School District came in with a request for a fund transfer of $100,000 because of some unexpected facilities damage they had. The House bill has a $100,000 grant rather than a fund transfer for the Virginia School District.
And, Mr. Chair and members, in the Senate package, we provided the fund transfer, and we'll see that in the levies, on the levy side. On line 30, the Senate changes the kindergarten milk program from a 14 cents per carton appropriation to 20 cents, so that carries $402,000 of increase above the base in fiscal 09, an $852,000 increase in the tail. Mr. Chair and members, in last year's K-12 bill, there was an adjustment to deal with some technical issues in the Plainview Elgin Millville School District. Due to a drafting error, the school district should have received an additional $7,000 levy adjustment. The House carries that as an aid adjustment of an additional $7,000. We'll see that on the levy side when we look at the levy tracking for the Senate. On line 32, the Senate makes some increases to the health and developmental screening appropriation that carries $936,000 of increases above the base in 09 and $2.2 million in 10 and 11. So, Mr. Chair and members, moving next to the Department of Education, where there are a collection of changes. The House makes the governor's recommendation of 4% reduction to the Department of Education for each year. The Senate makes a slightly higher reduction in 09, $922,000, and then reverts back down to that 4% reduction in 10 and later. The House increases the provides funding for a task force for the Education Achievement Task Force, and the Senate appropriation is a $100,000 rider. The Senate also on line 47 has $20,000 for an outdoor education working group, which is included in the bill. There's some changes to the online learning program, and those carry some increased costs. The administration of the program is $112,000 and $103,000 in the tails, and then a one-year addition to the advisory council sunset carries a $6,000 impact. The Senate also has a state advisory board on early learning, which carries a $50,000 impact. And then the report card administration carried in this bill has a $188,000 impact. So in total, the House is $862,000 below the state agency base, and the Senate is 446. That would be on line 55. So, Mr. Chair, members, the total general fund impact on line 58 for both bills, the House is above the base, $22,869,000 for fiscal year 10 and, 8 and 9, and the Senate is below the base, $1.143 million. Okay, so Mr. Chair and members, unless there are questions, I'll just skip quickly over the special revenue fund. There's some small increases in fees associated with the State Board of Teaching's licensing by portfolio. And Mr. Chair and members, Senator Stumpf is pointing out to me that I skipped over. We display lines 61 through 65 to show if you had done a shift or if any shifts are included in the bill, what the net impact is absent those shifts. And because the Senate bill did have the $6.1 million of savings for that adjustment in shift, there's a you can see the effect on that on line 65 if you'd like to see that the Senate bill is actually $4.9 million above the base. The last page, Mr. Chair and members, shows the levy adjustments. As the chair mentioned, this somewhat out of the purview, but they are bundled together. With your indulgence, I'll go through them very quickly. Many of these initiatives we've already discussed. The reciprocity on transition on line 86 carries some $116,000 impact in 10 and 11. The equalizing factor changes in the Senate bill are reduced levies by $32,000. Equity equalizing factors are up 70-88. The alternative compensation new schools limitation in the Senate package, because this continues for 5 years, it's slightly different than what you would see displayed for the House, down $14 million. Rolling out QComp, there's also a levy impact from that rollout, $36.4 million. Referendum equalizing factor changes, again, these are effects from the tax bill, down $744. The Senate package on line 92 makes an adjustment to some levy savings that were done in a whole collection of small school levies in the 2003 budget savings session. So that is corrected and carries a $227,000 increase. On line 93, you see the rollout of the Gen Ed reflected, of the QComp reflected as a positive 36.4. There's a sparsity transportation levy in the Senate package on line 94 for sparsity districts, $4.7 million. A fund transfer for the Ricori School District, a fund transfer for Hills Beaver Creek, 82 and 260 respectively. The Senate package increases the building lease levy from a $100 cap to $150. That carries a $2.3 million impact and a 3.7. There's also an adjustment for intermediate school districts. The House package on line 96 takes a prior year savings from their QComp adjustment of 1.8 and the Senate of 2.1. Then the Plainview Elgin Millville correction that I spoke of earlier on line 99 of 7,000, and then two offsetting debt service equalization adjustments of $1 million, and then finally the Virginia fund transfer on line 102. So House levies are down $1.894 million. For the 10 and 11 biennium, and the Senate is down $4.55 million. So, Mr. Chair and members, that concludes the spreadsheets for the K-12 bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Nauman, Mr. Crowe. Are there questions for either the fiscal analyst or for the chairman on these articles? Okay. If not, thank you very much. Okay. Then the last articles we have are human services. Now, I understand, Senator Berglund, that Representative Huntley has a bill up in the Ways and Means Committee that should not take a long period of time. So do you want to begin, or do you want to have Representative Clark and you go over Representative Clark's part of the bill? Is that...
I don't care.
Okay, why don't we handle it that way? Let's work with initially with the sections that you and Representative Clark have in common, and then we will, if Representative Huntley's not back, we'll begin with the rest of the Senate bill. So do we have... We've got what, Mr. Godfrey, Mr. Walls. If all of you, if you prefer to stay there, that's fine. I don't know if you'd have more room at the table, but that's your call. So maybe you could just indicate which, where in the bill we have the areas. Representative Clark, that you're involved with.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I just have Article 18 to be talking about the public health part, I believe, if you're going to talk to Representative Huntley for a lot of the other part of it.
So what page should we refer to? On the first.
R6, I believe.
Okay, so I'm not sure who wants to start. Is it?
I'll go through the spreadsheet.
Okay, Senator Berglund.
The Senate did not take the cut to the federal, to the fetal alcohol syndrome grants or the tobacco prevention grants or the lead abatement grants. We did take a cut to the MenAble program. That program no longer has any federal funding and really can't do much with the amount of money they have without it. We took a cut to the Merck supplemental payments. We did not refinance the Health Care Access Fund. We have a special revenue increase because the state will be taking over the St. Louis County inspection program for food, beverage, and lodging. We have a separate bill traveling in the Senate on swimming pool regulations.
Give us the page and my numbers.
Yeah. Senator Berglund, can you indicate where you are so we can follow along? I'm not sure everybody's caught. I think you're on page 9. Is that correct?
Yeah, I just finished item 573. The next item we have is 591. We took a 1.7% cut to all non-entitlement grant funds. In line 599, we took a cut to the operating budget of the Department of Health. On line 608, on line 608, we took part of the repairs and betterments appropriation that was given to the Veterans Homes Board last year. On page 618, on line 618, we took $2.2 million from the state special revenue fund. The remainder of these items are special revenue items for the Board of Family Therapy, nursing home administrators, and we took the recommendation to increase their special revenue funding because of special circumstances in those agencies. And then we took on line 637 $3 million reduction from the Emergency Medical Services Bonus Award account.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the matter of the reduction to the Health Department operating budget, which is on line 599, we reduced their operating budget by $1.65 million, which was 6%. And there's language in the bill that describes how we did that, which I think goes along a little bit with some of your language in another bill, which is abolishing one assistant commissioner and one deputy commissioner. I think you have that are carrying some of that in a different bill. We did that in our bill. On the spreadsheet again, line 573, we have a healthcare interpreter roster, which was a Representative Tao bill. The birth records was another bill that is traveling separately, line 588 on the spreadsheet, that is regarding access for adopted persons who are 19 age or over, and that was added to our bill. Line 127, we restored $618,000.
Resident Clark, I'm sorry, if you could maybe pull the mic a little bit closer.
Okay. Line 187 is restoring funding, one-time funding to the long-term homelessness bill. There was $1 million that was cut last year, and so we restored $618,000 of that in this bill. And food shelves, we also added on line 133, one-time funding of $619,000 to restore the funding there. So we did not take the cuts that the governor did.
I'm sorry, similar
to the Senate.
Can you go over those two?
Two last ones?
What lines are they on?
The long-term homelessness was line 127.
Okay, and the food shelf is right below it.
And the food shelves is line 133. And I think the similarity is that we did not take the governor's cuts at all in our bill either.
Anything further?
Mr. Chairman, we have some other language in the bill. Do you want me to go beyond
yes.
the spreadsheet? Okay, so we did add language that have to do with a smoking shelter provision. That was a floor amendment that allows for smoking shelters. We have a section on safer children's products.
Resident Clark, could you make reference to the pages as you're
okay.
talking about these areas?
Oh, let's see. Maybe I should actually.
R9.
I think you might have the same Article
R9,
18. You can just look at that. Yeah, so let's start with interpreter services on page R6. Language there on providing interpreter services quality standards, and it allows for an annual fee to be charged to pay for those services so that we will have some standards for our interpreters and translators in the future.
Okay, and is this are these interpreters for medical purposes? What's the nature?
It's for the Commissioner of Health to write for certain for the health care interpreters. Mm-hmm. There are other interpreters that are funded by other means, for example, the courts and so on. This is not
okay. Well, I know that the courts, the Supreme Court has an Office of Interpreter Services, and there's a system that allows for certification. Many of the court interpreters are not certified. Is this something similar for use? I mean, the difference is that courts are obviously entirely within the public domain. Would this include, is this meant to include private clinics or public hospitals? Or?
Mr. Chairman, it would develop a statewide roster. My understanding, it's available to all the systems of health, public and private. Right now, the standards are not in place in the way that they need to be. We have it, as you mentioned, for the courts, also for hearing impaired, but we don't have it for we don't have a roster or some of the standards in place for the whole healthcare system. There was also on R7 a pool construction bill dealing with pool safety, swimming pool safety. That also was traveling as a separate bill. It is part of this bill, and it says that there needs to be some standards for the outlets and drains. This was following a tragic accident that happened in one of our community swimming pools. That's on R7, R8. That goes that far. R9, R10 is the portion I mentioned earlier of the smoking shelters that was amended on the floor to allow there to be smoking shelters, but not to have people served within them by staff. In R11, we begin with the safer children's products, and that deals with phasing out plasticizers in everything from baby bottles to baby toys, children's toys, phasing them out by 2009, describing that and defining that and assigning responsibility. That goes from R10 through R15 and bans the replacement of those basically endocrine disruptors with carcinogens or other types of products. And Mr. Chairman, I just want to say that we have quantified what the costs are when we do not limit these kinds of products, the kinds of impacts, especially on little children, their learning abilities, and a number of other issues.
And relative to that section, is there a separate bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And it's in this bill. In the House, we put it in this bill. I think in the Senate, it was traveling separately.
I know there's been some discussion, but this might be another example of a policy area that might not continue in this bill.
I would just say it's such a strong public health issue that I would at least encourage people to think about it, and we can talk about some of the quantification of the costs when we don't limit those issues, but we don't have a specific fiscal note on it.
Okay, well, I think you were present when we talked about these issues for a few minutes, and it just strikes me that I don't mean to pick out this particular area, but I know, Sarah Betzel, you expressed some strong concern about how we handle policy issues, but we'll wait on that, obviously, until we have some recommendations back from staff as to what appears to be policy as opposed to fiscal.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we have no policy language in this portion of our bill.
Okay. Any questions relative to Senator Murphy, or Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, I have a question about that EMS money, that $3 million. What was it in there for, and what happened to it? What did you use it for?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy, the EMS board has about 15.7 million dollars in the bank, and they use it for paying longevity awards, and we have taken $3 million of it. This did come to them via the general fund, so these are appropriations that have been made to them over the years. We've taken $3 million of it to help with budget reductions, and we have language in the bill that it will not affect the longevity awards.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, then you didn't take it particularly for any, you didn't take the $3 million from that and put it to something else. You just used it as money so you didn't have to make cuts somewhere else.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy, the totality of our bill is about budget reduction. We're not spending money anywhere in the bill.
Mr. Chairman?
I want to be careful, Senator Berglund. In the total bill, there are some very limited appropriations, but...
Well, in my part of the bill, there is
no that's
additional
correct.
Spending.
But Representative Murphy, we attempted, we got a $935 million deficit, and we were looking for surplus funds, reserve funds, and you'll find that throughout the Senate bill, not just simply with this appropriation.
And where's, Mr. Chairman, where's the language for the longevity, that the longevity awards will not be reduced?
I'm not sure that...
We'll get Mr. Giel up to the table.
Ms. Kavanaugh is going to help us with that.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask a related question?
Yeah, Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, could you or your staff tell us how much the annual draw or how much the annual appropriation has been from that fund?
Mr. Godfrey.
Mr. Chair, members, Senator Frederickson, in fiscal year 07, $497,000 worth of awards were made. The fund also received a $700,000 general fund appropriation, and the balance left over from that $700,000 general fund appropriation then is still in the balance of the fund. But on average, over the last couple of years, the annual award amount has been about, in total, between $450,000 and $490,000.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Godfrey, before the reduction that the Senate took, what is the balance in the fund?
Before the reduction the Senate took, currently it's $15.7 million. There's actually a scheduled transfer from that fund based on last year's budget, and the balance at the end of this year before the transfer, the $3 million transfer, would be $15.1 million. At the end of 2009, if the transfer was to occur, the balance would be $12.9 million.
Thank you.
Okay, and did Ms. Kavanaugh have the answer to Representative Murphy's question?
Chair and members, the language is on R98. Starts at section 1 and it continues on R99, and 197.22 to 197.23 is the language, and it says that the value of each service credit shall be $447.99, so it establishes a value of that credit.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Rukavina.
So, Mr. Chair, what is the reduction under currently what they would get, you know?
Mr. Chairman, the reason the language was placed in the bill was to make it clear that in the past the longevity awards have been based on the amount of money that they have in the account, apparently a lot of extra money in the account. And we just want to make it clear that we were not intending for the board to reduce those longevity grants. Longevity grants established in the language of the Senate bill are established at the amount that was set last session.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Rukavina, the $447 service credit figure that Ms. Kavanaugh mentioned is based on, that's the service credit amount that was in place for last year. And so this just continues that same level of service credit into the future.
So, Mr. Chair, it isn't a reduction, but was it in fact there in some type of inflator that was clarified that they're not getting?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, the way that the service credit was calculated in the past, or is currently calculated, is based on the total number of service credits divided by into the balance of the fund. And so because we'd be reducing the balance by $3 million, at least temporarily, it would take a while to get built back up. We wanted to make sure that individuals who are eligible for the service credit in the coming years would receive it at the same level that they currently, or they received it last year, which is actually the highest service credit level that the awards have ever been made at. So nobody would do worse than what the participants got last year.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Rukavina, there's just a lot of extra money in this account. It isn't being used for longevity awards.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Berlin, I understand the, you know, especially the difficulty with your portion of this bill and reductions, because there's a lot of important items in there. But I was getting some phone calls, and I was just wondering if it was a reduction in what could have been building up, or
we don't,
it's been clarified now that
we don't believe so.
Okay. Further discussions on the public health article? Questions for the discussion? Okay. Thank you, Representative Clark. All right. As I indicated, Representative Huntley should be back here shortly. Is that correct?
Right. He's presenting a bill in Ways and Means, Mr.
Okay.
Chairman.
So, Senator Berlin, do you want to discuss the Senate portion of Human Services?
Mr. Chairman and members of the Conference Committee, the first several items in the bill deal with federal compliance. So you'll see on, I guess mine is stapled, I can't see, but it's about line 80.
Okay, so you're on the spreadsheet. Is that correct, Senator Berlin?
Okay.
There's a federal compliance item for child support with a small increased appropriation as a result. In line 90, there's federal compliance with medical assistance cost-sharing limits. In line 103, there's federal compliance with Medicaid payments to public providers.
And we're not doing that one.
That one is actually not required at this time by the federal government. There's federal compliance for Medicaid targeted case management, and that's a small reduction. There's federal compliance with county IGT and nursing home rate add-on. Those items balance out to a zero. Next item we have is the long-term care partnership program. That's to encourage the use of private long-term care insurance. The next one we have is the administrative reductions to the department. They are at the 4% governor's level. Then we have some special revenue funds where there were surpluses and we're eliminating those surpluses. The next item is counties that have receivables due to the department based on their use of state-operated services. And that's a $2 million figure. The next one is repayment of county waiver overspending by some counties. The next item is a forecast change in the adoption assistance program. The next item is support work grants for the MFIP program. This is an item where we're using TANF funds, and we need to be spending that money in order to make sure that we are coming into compliance with the federal work participation requirements. Next item is a repeal of the family cap. That also is use of TANF funds. The next one is a grant to community action agencies for auto repairs and purchases. The next item, line 227, is a governor's item on refinancing of TANF. We've only taken those portions of those lines that deal with claiming of MOE, and there is a separate bill traveling to collect to be able to claim past amounts on that item as well, so that those numbers may be changing. The next item is returning MFIP cash spending to the 2007 end of session level. The next item is some surplus funds that are in the basic sliding fee child care account. The next item is a small reduction to the growth of the pre-K exploration program. The next item on round 280 is restructuring of the HIV grant funding. The next item is on line 286. It's eliminating the Wilmer meth treatment activity. The funds in the future will go into funding the meth pilot programs. It'll provide some base funding. There's no base funding for that now. The next item is a delay in state payments to counties for their grants. The next item is a delay of an inpatient hospital payment. The next item is managed care withhold increase. I think the Senate did this a little bit different than the governor or the House, in that we did not take the health care access funds for the withhold, and we have a higher percentage withhold. which gives us a higher general fund reduction. The next item limits the average administrative spending by the health plans to 7%. The next item is delaying inpatient hospital rebasing. The next item is a reduction to outpatient hospital fee-for-service rates by 3%. The next item is a provider rate cut in the fee-for-service program by 3%. The next item is increasing the number of items that the department would prior authorize. The next item is asking the department to increase their third-party liability collections. This would be a case where an individual would have private health insurance when they apply for Medicaid. They may not know they have it even, but we are supposed to be collecting against those policies before we use the Medicaid program. The next item is a refund of health plan reserves. The bill in the Senate sets a threshold of reserves for the managed care plans. We have about 54% of the revenue in the program from our public programs, and so we are reducing 50% of the reserves to reflect the threshold that's been set in the bill for reserves on public programs. The next item is having the long-term care COLA for the non-nursing home providers start October 1st, which is the same date that the nursing home COLA will begin. The next item takes half of the governor's recommended cut for fee-for-service pharmacy rates. The next item, we freeze the Mindo waivered services program, and that goes along with a limit in the slots that are available for the developmentally disabled in the fee-for-service system. Next item is a 1.7% reduction in non-forecasted grant programs in the Department of Human Services. The next item is a limit on the slots in the home and community-based waiver program. The next one is a reduction in administrative costs to PCA providers. This is targeted at those that are over the average administrative costs. The next item is a 4% reduction in per diem at our Minnesota sex offender program. And there's language in the bill that would exclude the treatment portions from a reduction. There also is some language in the bill that is there to help deal with making the reduction by giving the department more tools to make this program more cost effective. Completes the Senate portion of the Human Services bill.
And Senator Berglund, before we turn over to Representative Huntley, a couple things. Is there any language that you think needs to be highlighted in the bill?
The only language that I think needs to be highlighted, I just mentioned. It's in relationship to the reductions that are made at the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. There's language in there that one will change the definition of vulnerable adult in the program. There's another. There's other language that would set up a task force to look at changing the licensing of the program.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Huntley, before we begin, just Senator Berglund, you mentioned this at the outset, but obviously want members to note on line 516, that is the most significant difference between the administration and the legislature is the transfer of the health care access fund. And when you look at the, as Commissioner Hansen indicated when he spoke to us last Thursday, when you look at the differences between the House and the Senate and the governor, we would all agree this is kind of the centerpiece of the difference between the legislature and the administration. Representative Huntley.
I apologize for being late. I had a bill up in another committee. Did you want me to go through just where we're different than the Senate? Or
whatever you'd like to emphasize, if you want to indicate differences, if you want to talk about why you did one thing versus another, whatever you'd like to present to the conference committee.
Yeah, I think I'll just, Mr. Chair, itemize the where we have significant differences. And the on line 151, this is a treatment center for American Indian youth in Bemidji. And originally they tried to get bonding money, but apparently that was not possible, so they ended up with a cash to help purchase the facility in Bemidji. It's an existing facility that was already used as a treatment center by a religious organization, I think, and they it's one of the tribe wishes to open it up for their kids. On let's go to 187. Obviously, there's some increased spending in the Senate side that we did not do in the House. On page 203, again, the Senate position is to fund auto repair grants and purchases to individuals. We did not do that. The next item, 209 to 210, is a series of TANF refinancing. As Senator Berglund said, part of this is in another bill that is traveling separately because it has to have a deadline attached to it before the end of this month, I believe.
For back claiming.
And again, on 222, where there's Senate did some things that with MFIP that we did not do in the House. Child care, again, we did not do that. And the pre-K exploratory program, I'm not even sure what that is. It must be from a different committee than the one I was in charge of. And let's see.
Mr. Chairman, I'm reminded that that would have been in the on the House side in Nora Slawick's committee is the. The reason Representative Huntley wouldn't have had it in his division.
We did not, on page 340, we did not do the health plan reserves cuts. And on one of the major ones is 370, and we used TANF refinancing to give a 2% COLA to nursing facilities. That's on top of the 1.75%. Rebasing that they were supposed to get. And let's
see. So Rivers and Huntley, relative to that 2%, so that's for the second year of the biennium, it's $6 million. But you also that's not a one-time appropriation. You would do that as an ongoing appropriation.
An ongoing.
And so, what's the increase then in 10-11 from the 09 figure? Or why the increase?
It, Mr. Chair, in 2010 it's 8.6, and in 2011 8.5 million.
Okay, well, are you phasing it in, or what?
Because it starts in October, so okay. This is a full year.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, the first one, the 5.7, is it starts in October, so you don't get the whole year.
So the 5.7 is, would that be like a 9-month appropriation, and then you do it as an ongoing appropriation?
Right.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins.
Representative Huntley, did I not hear you correctly? Did you say you used TANF money to do that?
Yes.
Because on line 372 it says general fund.
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Huntley said they refinanced TANF into the general fund to pay for this item. And I would share your concern, Mr. Chairman. I don't know that we can predict that the TANF fund in the future will have enough money to continue to refinance the increase that this COLA will represent in future years.
And what did we do last year? We did what, 2% last year? So this figure is obviously on top of what we did last year.
Right, right. Okay. They were, Mr. Chair, they were to get rebasing in the coming year, and that was equivalent of about 1.75%.
Plus there is the rest of the 2% goes for performance awards.
All right, thanks. Senator Frederickson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, so I understand what the proposal is. This would be a one-time 2% increase for the first year of the biennium that would carry through the second year?
It's a one-time, excuse me, it's not one-time. It starts in October of the next fiscal year, this October, and it carries over then into the following biennium as well.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, just so you understand, these COLA increases tend to have inflationary tails into the future that are not shown on this spreadsheet.
And Mr. Chairman, that brings me to my second question. The second year of the biennium shows a smaller dollar amount than the first year. Typically, you see an increase in the second year. Why is there a slightly smaller increase the second year?
It's a lower amount in the second year.
Mr. Chair, Jeffrey. Senator Frederickson, I'm told by DHS staff that it's all based on the number of beds in the system and how that COLA will be applied to those beds. And it's estimated that between fiscal year 10 and 11, there'll be a decreased number of beds in the system.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Huntley.
If we go to the next page, and I sort of have to apologize for this one because we did not give a COLA to the long-term care facilities like we did to nursing homes. Let's see. We did not do the, on page, or line 423, we did not reduce pharmacy rates. And we did on 430 freeze the, as did the governor, the substance abuse treatment rates. And on 430, this one is a very significant difference. We basically canceled the DSH payments or disproportionate share for hospitals. This is particularly bad for Hennepin County Hospital regions, and the two in Duluth, in the city of Duluth get hit very hard with it, with this.
Mr. Chair.
Sarah Higgins.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, I see you're doing that for 2008 as well. So this is money that they've been expecting to have in their budget, and now they're it's going to be $18 million left.
That is correct, Senator Higgins.
Handful of hospitals.
There's some discussion with the Department of Human Services as to whether that money can be implemented.
Mr. Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, we have the department has applied for this money in their state plan. We were told that they will hear sometime within the next 90 days as to whether it's been approved. They expect it to be approved. These are federal funds that are available, have been made available to the states. And they indicated in my division that they would then be making those payments retroactively at the time that they receive the approval.
Yeah, let's go on.
And then, Mr. Chair,
Sarah
one
Higgins.
More question. I see online, dang, that number's small, 439 possibly, that you're increasing payments to two hospitals?
Yes, that was to take care of two hospitals, Bethesda and Gillette, that try to not harm them as much as we did when we did the DSH.
Mr. Chairman, those are payments in existing law that are being exempted by the governor and the House in their positions. So all the hospitals would lose their DSH money except those two.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley or Senator Berglund, why those two specifically?
Those two hospitals, Senator Higgins, have Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins have a really high percentage of people on medical assistance, yes. Practically all their clients, and so if you so they normally they get a fairly significant DSH payment. So this is to try to alleviate some of the damage that getting rid of DSH did to them.
So, Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Timberly.
She'll probably say the same
Senator
thing I was
Higgins,
going to say.
Those hospitals get money through the regular supplemental DSH payment that's being cut. Last session they were given a little bit on top of it. It's the little bit on top of that is not being cut here.
All right.
So those hospitals are still being hurt pretty badly by this reduction.
Okay. Thank
but
you.
If it's made.
Let's see. On page or line 478, there's the Senate did a reduction in grant programs of 1.7%, and we did not do that in the House. On line 500, we did not reduce PCA provider rates, and on line 505, we did not make the reduction in those rates.
Minnesota sex offender program.
Yeah. And the rest is. This is not my thing. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So that's the major differences, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Thomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, earlier you highlighted the health care access fund as being a big difference in the governor and all the rest of this. Is there a bottom line comparison as to the difference between the House and the Senate? Are we close on the total number, or I don't think I've seen that here.
Well, we had taken, Mr. Chairman, in order to do apples to apples, you really need to take the health care access fund out.
Yeah.
The House uses $22.5 million of it. The governor uses almost $400 million of it. When you subtract that out, the Senate position in fiscal year 08-09, we're under the governor by $31.6 million, and in fiscal year 10 and 11, we're over by $30.5 million.
And, Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, how does that compare to what the House does?
I don't have for the House.
It's within, Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, it's within a million or two.
Mr. Chairman.
Our number.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Tomasoni, for all of the areas that we do in the Senate bill compared to all of the areas in the House, we're about $80 million apart. When you take the health care access fund out.
Mr. Mosman.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't know if you have in your book, if you go back to the overall tracking spreadsheet on the front page, it's... You can see towards the middle of the front page, there's the summary for the Health and Human Services spending and revenue changes. As you go across there, obviously for 2008-2009, $250 million of the governor's revenue changes is the health care access fund. So you can kind of mentally take that out. But as you go across, then the Senate is at a net position of minus $197 million, where the House is at overall position of $131.5 million. And that reflects both all of the Health and Human Services Budget Division in the Senate and the Health and Human Services Budget Division in the House, as well as the public health provisions that Representative Clark talked about.
Mr. Chairman, it does not take into account the use of the Health Care Access Fund by the governor to refinance general fund programs, which would make that number larger.
Another $48 million. Okay. Further questions for Representative Huntley and Senator Berglund? Anything further? Okay, well, thank you very much. Members, if I could have your attention for a minute, we were able to finish this a little bit more quickly than we thought we might. What we'd like to do is let members know as to the next meeting time of the conference committee. We'll have to try to track where we are this week in terms of House and Senate floor sessions as well as other committee hearings. What Representative Carlson and I will do later today or first thing tomorrow morning is discuss an invitation to the administration. I mean, obviously, we had an overview from Commissioner Hansen, but to have commissioners of respective agencies that feel there are problems with what we have before us, to offer them a chance to testify on what would happen or not happen. I would also suggest to committee members, if there are areas of testimony you would like to have heard relative to your budget, to let us know, and we'll extend that same invitation, of course, to the division chairs who are not members of the conference committee. So let us know if there are areas you'd like to have some public testimony before the full conference committee. And again, we're going to extend that to not necessarily going through the division chairs, but extend that to the administration commissioners if they'd like to testify to their particular part of the budget. And Representative Carlson, we haven't talked, but there might be other areas. I don't know if, for instance, we've had a lot of material from the Supreme Court. I don't know if we want to include something like that, or if there are other parts of the budget not within the purview of the administration.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that would be appropriate. When I was visiting with you, and I said the commissioners, I was meaning the other branches of government as well, so the administration as well as the courts, I think that would be appropriate. We will make that announcement.
They're coming here at their own risk.
This afternoon, then, is that what you were intending to do?
Yeah, I think let's see if we can't get a timeout.
So we make sure our calendars are appropriate. I know both House and Senate Finance meet tomorrow afternoon.
Yes.
There might be, and we'll let people know for sure, that it looks like maybe some possibilities to do that in the morning.
Yes.
At about the same time, but we'll confirm that as the two chairs talk.
Okay. Further, Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chair, just to be clear, if you're going to take public testimony, it has to be budget, not policy related, I take it.
Thank you, Senator Betzel. That's the purpose.